This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Charles Spencer is the author of 7 history books, many of them bestsellers. He also co-hosts the Rabbit Hole Detectives podcast and has presented historical documentaries for television. He was educated at Oxford before working for NBC News for a decade and was an on-air reporter for The Today Show and a presenter for the History Channel. In his latest book, The Memoir, A Very Private School, he takes us inside his family homes at Park House in Althorp, but mostly inside Madewell Hall, where he and so many others suffered toxic abuse during his years there in the 1970s. Listeners, I do want to mention that this conversation will touch on abuse, both sexual and physical, on a high level. So if that is triggering for you, as powerful as I know this conversation will be, please take care of yourself and respect your own boundaries and needs. We are beyond honored to have you here today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Well, as I just said to you in the pre-show, I want to start honestly by thanking you for this book. This is a memoir, yes, but it's a zoomed-in memoir on an incredibly difficult period of your life, which is the time when you were at Madewell Hall, a boarding school, from ages 8 to 13. And as difficult as it was to read, I cannot imagine how difficult it was to write. So you write, it is a study of sadness of a boy lost. You've written many other books, as I just said in the introduction. You certainly did not owe anyone this brave and vulnerable memoir, which you refer to as the book of my life. So why take this project on, and why now specifically?
Well, I didn't think I was going to write a book about this subject, but as part of the therapy I've been involved in for decades now, and a lot of it touching on my years at this school, I started a folder on my computer and just jotted down memories from the school. And then one day I looked at that folder properly and I realized I had 700 headings for different things, some very mundane, you know, the things we did each day, and then others of, as you've mentioned, really serious toxic abuse. And I was talking to a guy, somebody flagged up that he had been at school with me, he was a year younger, and he never talked about his time there. In fact, his wife said he had never, ever talked about his time there. And I sat with him and I said, look, you know, I'm contemplating a book, but would you mind just saying what happened to you? And he told me horrific things. And I took notes down and it was 10 pages of notes, and including how he had been seriously sexually assaulted as a 9-year-old, et cetera, you know, really appalling things. And I put my notebook down and I said, look, I just can't write a book on this. It's too dark. And this very quiet, mild-mannered Englishman from a certain sort of social background just reached out across to me and he grabbed my arm and he said, someone has to tell our story. And I kept coming across these very brave, quiet men who had been dealing with an awful lot, and it became clear that I had to do it, really.
What was the most challenging part of taking this journey and writing the book, and what was the most cathartic part for you?
The most challenging part was meeting up with men 50 years or 45 years since I'd met them before to talk about their experiences and feeling utterly bereft, so sad at their stories, these things they'd never told anyone. You know, a lot of them said, I tried to put that in a box and forget about it. And then they started to talk about it. And I would come home utterly shattered by listening to what had happened to them. And I tell you, one of the strange things, although I was pretty badly abused myself, as I'm sure we'll get on to, but It was hearing other people's tales of what had happened to them that was unbelievably sad-making and upsetting. It really got to my soul. The most cathartic thing was really the past few months. So I started writing this 5 years ago, and it has been a pretty hellish journey. It triggered in me the migraines I used to have at that school. I've had endless nightmares. It's been really a tough old road, I would say. But I suddenly realized about 2 or 3 months ago that I was reconnected. I mean, I dedicate the book to Buzz, Mm-hmm. And of course, that doesn't mean anything until you get right to the end. And then I reveal.
And I cried when I read that. We're going to talk about that. Yeah.
And I dedicated to the little boy I had been before I was brutalized by this school, I guess. And I have reconnected with Buzz and feel very much more at home with myself. And I think I've buried a few demons along the way, really.
Well, we're going to talk about Buzz in just a moment. As I just said, I actually shed tears because I wondered who Buzz was as well when I read the dedication page, figuring maybe I will never know. Buzz is a friend of yours or something like that, or a classmate. But when it all came together, it was extraordinarily powerful, especially after you've been through the journey through the book. So listeners, as I said, I'm going to give a little background here. The book is about one school, Madewell, but it's also really about, as you write, how things too often were 50 years ago in the English private educational school. So attending a private boarding school is a commonplace occurrence amongst the aristocratic children of Great Britain that continues still today. You write that in the 1970s, when you were at Madewell, there was a notion that children were better off under its roof, learning to be biddable, influential members of society rather than living as we should have done, as nature intended, with our families. So this is not just for boys. Your three older sisters, Sarah, Jane, and Diana, also all attended boarding school. And you write, during the three annual terms, each of some 12 or 13 weeks, contact with our parents was a Sunday letter home written under supervision. You add that the limitations set around communication and the nature of our family relationships back then made abuse possible, indeed more likely and hard to detect. So again, what you and your classmates went through at Madewell is almost impossible for me to fathom. Sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional, mental, psychological abuse. Again, I know that I was not a part of this abuse, but I still want to say I'm so sorry for what happened to you and all the others who endured this at Madewell or elsewhere. So Madewell reads like a combination of prison and boot camp. And you write that Madewell was typical of the boarding schools of its time and being effectively a closed community. It attracted staff who were drawn to this blend of quiet and secrecy. Some of them welcomed power and status and the ability to cut off the outside world. Many of these adults weren't there for the boys' best interest, but to meet their own darker needs. So listeners, to get the full picture, please buy this powerful book. But on a high level, how would you describe life at Madewell?
It was a real challenge. You know, I was taken there my first day as an eight-year-old and left there by my father, who was a very loving father, but he was part of the system. You know, he'd been brought up in this way that you accepted that your children had to have their hearts broken by being sent to boarding school at a very young age. And develop the stiff upper lip, for which the English upper classes are sort of infamous, I'd say, rather than famous. Mm-hmm. And it was devastating, really. The sheer nastiness of most of the staff was really what I remember. And, you know, 8 years old is so young. And there were even seven-year-olds there. There was one boy who was taken there with me, and his parents hadn't even told him he was going to be left there. So he thought he was on a day trip with his parents, and then they'd suddenly disappeared on him. It is difficult to understand because we're all, you know, those of us who are parents today are probably much more, even from certainly my background, much more involved with our kids than back then. But you arrived in this place where you realized straight away that the most terrifying figure in the school was the headmaster, the head teacher. Mm-hmm. He basically constructed the school to feed his perversions. You know, he was a sadist and a pedophile, and he demanded to have six or so of the 72 boys that were at the school delivered up to him by the system of discipline so that he could beat them and cane them and, you know, cause really serious physical pain. One of my best friends from the school, who I went to the school on the same day as, he's 59 like I am, and he still has scars on his buttocks from the canings. Mm. So this is an unbelievably harsh environment. And I don't want to sound genderist, but I think one of the problems with Madewell was there were no sympathetic female characters. You know, we've been deprived of our mothers. Mm-hmm. And the headmaster's wife was a sort of ghost in the background. The matron in charge of sort of cleanliness and food and all that was horrifyingly nasty. And then others were deviant. So you're dealing with a school without any feminine warmth. I know that sounds very old-fashioned, but that is the case. Mm-hmm. And run by a very, very evil man whose sidekicks were either in on the game with him, and I call that the game, it's perversion and cruelty, or were likely to remain mute And that's why I call it a very private school. That was an intentional construct that he made, was to make it a place where we had no communication. You've touched on that. It was a weekly letter home. There was obviously no mobile phones, cell phones, whatever. There was no landline. You know, we were totally stuck in the middle of nowhere, being run by a group of really deeply flawed human beings.
In your book, you write that across 2,500 boarding schools in England, there are 630,000 boarding students today. But, and I'm quoting you, few of those institutions would have survived if they hadn't evolved significantly from the time I write about. So inexplicably, Madewell does still exist today. Can you tell us how the school evolved and how the system of boarding schools in England have evolved as a whole?
Yeah, I don't know an enormous amount about Madewell. I do actually have some friends who have children there now, and it does seem from their account to be a much gentler, more family orientated place. You know, they actually have people on the website who have pastoral care. There was absolutely zero pastoral care for the children when I was there in the 70s. Mm. And I think that they are businesses. At the end of the day, these private schools are businesses. So they have to compete in the market by presenting themselves as kind places that are going to nurture children fully. Now, of course, there are always going to be bad adults who take advantage of vulnerable children. But I think that there is a whole raft of safety measures now and inspections. You know, we had nobody ever visit the school to inspect it, to see what was going on. And the parents were very, very rarely allowed into the place, you know, maybe once or twice a year inside the building. And I don't know, it's extraordinary to think that it was possible 50 years ago to close down a community for the benefit of very, very bad adults. And the children just sort of had to suffer it, really. I mean, I'm not saying everyone was abused. I've spoken to a lot of people. A couple of them said, yeah, it was a terrible place, but they enjoyed the sports. And I actually really enjoyed, I've got friends, as I touched on earlier, who I made at that place. And I have resilience, actually. That's one thing. I mean, it was bought at quite a price, but I could sort of survive anywhere in the world because of what I went through. And I'm sure a lot of my contemporaries could. But I think, you know, I have heard of other schools at the same time. Excuse me. I've heard of other schools at the same time that had the same very serious issues going on. And then I've heard of others in the 70s which were happy places. So I think it was just bad luck that I ended up at an extreme outlier like Madewell in the 70s.
Well, I want to talk about Buzz, because you write at one point in the book that writing this book is a reclamation of your childhood. So there's no way around the childhood trauma that your life at Madewell produced during your formative years. And as you write, many of us left Madewell with demons sewn into the seams of our souls. Your childhood trauma extends beyond Madewell. You write that you experienced abandonment before being sent off to Madewell. This was in the mid-60s when I was 2. This is you speaking through your words, not me, obviously. And my mother left home for a man she'd fallen in love with. That, of course, is your stepfather, Peter Shan Kidd. Your father also later remarried to a woman named Rain. So you write heartbreaking. This line broke my heart. As an 8-year-old, which is when you were sent off to Madewell, I felt that I had been sent away from home because I had somehow fallen short as a son. I can't overstate that this is during your most formative years that this abuse and this is happening. So you struggled with fervent homesickness that you called as inexplicable as it was inescapable. So we keep talking about Buzz. The book is dedicated to Buzz. I read that at the beginning of the book. I, of course, as I said, wondered who Buzz was, but that is answered later in the book. I cried as I read Buzz explained towards the end of the book. So after going through this journey with you, so I would love for you to tell our listeners who Buzz is. You kind of already have. And I would love to know what you would say to him, to Buzz today.
Well, Buzz was the nickname my mother gave me as a little boy. And it was because I was very energetic, into everything, quite, you know, a very happy, healthy, energetic, naughty child. And that was something that that character in me had to just be suppressed during these years of abuse. And I would say, for instance, you know, I do actually say it in the book, you know, to survive at a place as absolutely appalling as Madewell was then, a small but important part of us had to die. And that was the open, happy part. You had to just survive, really, because if you stuck out, you were likely to get severely hurt physically and emotionally. And I would say that I've reconnected with the buzz part of me, if I may put it that way, 50 years on. You know, writing the book was very tricky, as I've already said, but coming out the other side, I feel so much more positive. And hearing from so many of my contemporaries, classmates, and all of that, they're so pleased that somebody's finally telling the truth. The first book I got, I sent to a friend who's emigrated to Australia on the back of his own absolutely shocking treatment as a little boy. And his wife said, my goodness, when he heard you were writing this, you know, it was like a weight was lifted off his shoulders. And you know, the English, we're famously reserved and cold. And to have people tell me, one of the guys who was at this school with me, 3 years older than me, just wrote and said, I just want you to know, I've been with my wife for 40 years and I've never told her anything about this. Wow. But because you're writing this book, I just did. And we've just been crying for an hour.
Wow. Going back to Madewell for a second, referring to your time there, you say those crimes were never challenged, even by those adults who witnessed them from close up. Some of them were even in on the game. So to your knowledge, have any of the adults from the book ever faced accountability for their terrible actions?
No, I'm at a loss. Well, actually, most of them are dead now, but I'm at a loss to understand. So what happened was, pretty soon after you in the States had a lot of problems, you know, very serious issues with the Catholic Church, etc. Mm-hmm. This started to come out that these private schools have been acting like this. And there was a big sort of legal look at some of the schools. And I wrote to the legal figure in the newspapers who was most bound up in rooting out the truth here. And I just said, look, I don't want to initiate legal action against these people. But I was at Madewell between 1972 and 1977. And if anyone comes forward, I'm happy to corroborate what they say. And actually, I don't think anyone did come forward. You know, it's an irony, really, that the school, one of the main rules in the school was never tell tales. And, you know, it's absurd, of course. But when I was writing the truth in my book, there were moments where I had to seize myself and say, no, just get on with it. Because something was nagging away at me. You know, you're telling tales, you're telling on people, even though all I was doing was revealing a too long forgotten truth, really.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you again for this book. I think it's going, as you just said about your friend, is going to open up so many conversations that have been buried for decades and decades and decades. And thank you for your bravery in sharing your story with the world when you did not have to do that. And our final question for you is, you know, on parenting, you write, privileged parents back then tended to devote less direct energy to their children than it is expected and is considered normal now. You write elsewhere in the book how parents would travel abroad with aplomb, indulging themselves and having fun. And as you write, the assumption was that someone responsible was looking after the children on their behalf. But at the exact time that my parents were respectively in Austria and Italy, I was being sexually abused by the assistant matron. So that, of course, is harrowing. You are the youngest of the four Spencer children. Your sister Diana was the closest to you in age. She looked after you. And there's an anecdote in the book about how she couldn't settle down until she knew that you were okay. Later, of course, she broke the mold on parenting within the royal family. I, of course, never had the privilege of knowing her. Of course, I wish I had, not even because of her fame or style, but because of the person that she so obviously was. So this is such a brave effort from you. What do you think your sister Diana would say to you upon the extremely courageous release of this book?
Well, it's funny, actually, because earlier today, one of her very closest friends said, I think she'd be very proud.
Mm.
So that's nice.
Mm. Makes me emotional right there with you. Thank you for this book.
Thank you.
This book is so powerful. And again, I also want to thank you again for having the courage to write it. And to our listeners, the book is called A Very Private School, A Memoir. And it came out this past Tuesday, March 12th. So we appreciate you again so much for being here today. And thank you for sharing your story with us.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure. Thank you very much, both of you.